It's a secret society few have ever penetrated.
If you open your mouth about our business, you're through.
In one of the most ruthless gangs in America.
They'll kill your children, they'll kill your mother, they'll kill your father, they'll kill your grandparents. To make that example.
A small group of white convicts that's transformed itself into a criminal empire. All from behind bars.
There was no doubt about what would happen to you if you ever, ever betrayed us or crossed our path.
Even the most hardened criminals know them by name and fear them.
When you talk about a white group, the bell that rings the loudest is the AV.
Delve inside a world of greed and brutality. Investigate this vicious criminal underworld. Decipher its complex codes. And go inside what many are calling the most violent gang behind bars. The American prison system. Within these walls lies a ruthless subculture of predators and prey. Armed guards control the prison perimeter, but inside, gangs rule the convict world. Thousands of assaults take place each year behind bars. On average, one inmate is murdered every week. It's a landscape of sharply drawn lines between whites, blacks, and Hispanics.
If you have five people over here and I got 30 people over here, who do you think is going to win a battle? That's just basically in prison how it is. It's powers and numbers.
For inmates, rule number one is don't mix outside your race.
If you see a white guy getting stomped out over here by another race, being white, you have to help him. If you don't help him, you're going to get dealt with. That's just part of prison. That's prison politics.
40 years ago, this violent world gave birth to a merciless gang, an elite group of white convicts, the Aryan Brotherhood. Myth and legend surround the Brotherhood, and facts are hard to come by. Gang defectors suggest they run a multi-million dollar criminal organization, one that traffics in drugs, extortion, and contract killings. For four decades, these outlaws have terrorized America's penal system. Today, their reach extends beyond prison walls and into our neighborhoods. We'll expose the inner workings of the Aryan Brotherhood, who they are, how they began, and what's behind their sinister agenda. We'll discover how the gang continues to evade law enforcement and why they've remained virtually untouchable until now.
127!
This is the most notorious inmate you've never heard of. But behind bars, he's a living legend. By his own count, he's killed 22 men inside prison, all during gang-related conflicts.
I'm probably one of the most violent individuals you'll ever meet in your life. No brag, just fact. It's that simple.
As a veteran of numerous gang wars, he's built a reputation as a lethal prison yard combatant.
I'm not the kind of man that you want to underestimate. The fact that I'm still alive proves that.
His name is Michael Thompson. As a leader of the Aryan Brotherhood, he's been a key figure in the gang's bloody rise to power.
We've had the same blood on our hands. Intimacy comes in many, many different forms. Few things are as intimate as murder. Most people won't understand that.
Most inmates refuse to acknowledge the Aryan Brotherhood's existence. But Thompson has agreed to take us inside their secret world, a world few outsiders have ever penetrated. Until now. The Aryan Brotherhood first started inside California's maximum security penitentiaries, but they would rapidly expand, establishing control inside dozens of state and federal prisons across the nation. Among inmates, they have a fearsome reputation as savage killers.
It was the most prized, sought-after soldiers by the Italian mob for hitmen. Members of the Aryan Brotherhood when they step out of prison because of the ruthlessness.
The organization is so secret that no one even knows how many brothers exist. The gang may number as few as 100 made members, but they're rumored to control thousands of white inmates throughout the country.
If you don't do their bidding, they're going to move on you, and that applies to everybody.
For many white convicts, the Aryan Brotherhood are the so-called heroes of the prison system. By offering their protection against rival gangs, the Brotherhood maintains absolute authority over more vulnerable inmates. When mob boss John Gotti was assaulted at Marion Federal Penitentiary, he knew there was only one group he could turn to for revenge. The Aryan Brotherhood, the real godfathers inside prison.
These guys are the true untouchables. The Teflon Don, John Gotti ain't got shit on these guys.
The Federal Bureau of Prisons has estimated that the Brotherhood makes up less than 0.1% of their inmate population. Yet they are responsible for 20% of all murders.
If we have to, we'll come right up in the warden's office and kill you on the warden's desk. And it doesn't matter. And if the warden gets in the way, we'll kill the warden too.
For nearly a decade, a multi-agency federal investigation has been underway. Now the government believes they finally have the evidence they need to take the Brotherhood down.
Federal prosecutors are going after what they say is one of the deadliest criminal organizations in the country. But they won't have to go far to find them, as the defendants are already behind bars.
In the winter months of 2002, U.S. Marshals raid prisons across the country.
Get out!
They round up 30 of the most terrifying men in the nation, the entire suspected leadership of the Aryan Brotherhood. The government plans to take on this prison gang the same way they tackled the mafia. If they can destroy the organization's leadership, prosecutors hope the rest of the gang will crumble before it can fully infiltrate America's communities. Today, Brotherhood members are on trial in one of the largest death penalty cases in U.S. history.
In fact, the defendants will be chained to the floor. A specially constructed table will hide that from the jury. Four defendants go on trial here today. The others go to court later this year.
Prosecutors have set their sights on two men, Barry Mills and Tyler Bingham, the organization's top leaders. Barry Mills, also known as the Baron, once lured an inmate into a bathroom stall and nearly cut his head off. Tyler the Hulk Bingham is responsible for numerous inmate killings inside federal prisons. The government must prove that dozens of jailhouse murders are part of a criminal conspiracy, directed and sanctioned by Mills and Bingham. To penetrate the Brotherhood's veil of secrecy, investigators turn to former gang members. It's the only way to discover how this ruthless group of convicts continues to outwit prison officials, all under lock and key.
This is not a social club. It's not a bunch of kids playing at neo-Nazis. These are very, very dangerous men who will exterminate your family. Like that. That's who the Aryan Brotherhood is.
On August 28, 1997, the Aryan Brotherhood proved just how dangerous they are. Inside Lewisburg Penitentiary, one of the nation's most secure federal prisons, a vicious assassination attempt is underway. Wielding homemade steel shanks, a group of white convicts prepares for a brutal assault. Their target, two African-American prisoners, members of the DC Blacks, a rival prison gang. Outnumbered, the black inmates are easy prey. That's when the hit squad strikes. When prison officials discover the bodies, they're not just murdered, they're massacred. Each one stabbed nearly 40 times. Federal prosecutors Terry Flynn and Joey Blanche believe they finally have the hard evidence they need to prove the Lewisburg murders are part of a Brotherhood conspiracy.
these murders were done to further the goals of the enterprise. That is why they were ordered by Barry Mills and Tyler Bingham, and why they were carried out by the members of the Aryan Brotherhood.
But if Mills and Bingham ordered these assassinations, they did it all from inside the nation's most secure supermax prison, 1,500 miles away in Florence, Colorado. There are hundreds of gangs that terrorize America's cities. The Crips, the Bloods, MS-13. But the Aryan Brotherhood is one of the few gangs that formed not on the streets, but behind bars. This unique birthplace gave rise to a criminal society with its own rules, rituals, and brutal initiations. Members call the Aryan Brotherhood the Brand, a reference to cowboys from classic Western novels.
When you rode for the Brand, you were loyal to the Brand, because you rode for it. And that's why they call it the Brand.
That's how they view themselves, outlaw gunslingers trying to survive in a hostile world. While most gangs seek safety in numbers, the Aryan Brotherhood remains an exclusive crew. Only the most cunning and ruthless convicts may enter the Brand's privileged ranks. Men like Michael Thompson. In the autumn of 1975, Michael Thompson entered the California penal system. He was 23 years old.
Now, mind you, I'd never been arrested, had no prior records, had no idea what prison was like. So I was what they call a fish. And I had huge gills.
A former high school football star, Thompson was convicted as an accomplice in the murder of two drug dealers. Going to prison wasn't the end of a criminal career. It was just the beginning. Thompson was a prison rookie, but he quickly learned to survive and thrive.
My greatest advantage was my size and my willingness to engage in violence.
After defeating an attack by two members of the Black Gorilla family, Thompson was approached by the Aryan Brotherhood. Part Native American, Thompson resisted joining a white supremacist gang until he was convinced the Brand's true agenda isn't white power.
It's a criminal organization. We need to be clear on that. Is it racism? You bet there's racism. Is it dominant? No.
Though some Brotherhood murders appear to be racially motivated, the gang is a known ally of the Mexican Mafia. Some members are Jewish or of mixed racial backgrounds, unacceptable in most white supremacist groups. Brand leader Tyler Bingham is himself part Jewish and displays a Star of David tattooed on one arm and a swastika on the other. Convinced that criminal power is the gang's ultimate goal, Thompson embraced the Brotherhood completely, becoming a leading figure in the gang, a friend and confidant to Barry Mills and Tyler Bingham.
Tell you anything you want to know about Barry Mills, Barron, or T.D. Bingham. I've stood back to back with him on the yard and fought our enemy. The three of us were on the council together. Very intelligent men. Nice guys. But killers.
Inside California's prisons, Mills, Bingham, and Thompson transform the Brand into an organized, prison-based mafia. The Brotherhood's strategy is simple. Be more extreme, more violent, more terrifying than everyone around you.
Inmates will always fear me more than they will staff, because they believe that I will kill them if they don't do what I tell them to do. That's the essence of power.
Though Thompson does not believe this brutal agenda is driven by white power, the gang uses racial hatred, prison politics, and white supremacist literature to entice young convicts.
You get young skinheads, young national socialists, young white disenfranchised youth looking, thinking this is something that's a savior of our race.
Casper Crowell was once a feared Aryan Brotherhood enforcer.
You know, many of the things that I myself have done, I would have been knighted for 1,000 years ago. I would have been, at the very least, labeled a hero, a good citizen. But the laws of today have made me an outlaw, a killer, a monster.
Casper was seduced by the power and mystique that surrounds the Aryan Brotherhood.
If you see somebody put their hands on one of ours, you go and you get your shit and you take it out and you bury it in their chest. We may be the minority here, but if you step on our toes, we'll cut your foot off. And that attracted me. That was very appealing to me.
Casper has killed for what he believes in, his race, and the gang he considered his family, the Aryan Brotherhood. Now, for the first time, he's agreed to tell us his story.
First of all, I'm not comfortable standing this way in the first place because I don't like my back exposed to what I can't see. You know, so we're either going to have to walk further over this way, you know, because that's just a habit, and it's a good habit to have.
Casper is serving two life sentences for assault with a deadly weapon, but he says he didn't start out the hardened convict he is today.
Everybody in here, good, bad, and the ugly, we were all once somebody's little bundle of joy. Every parent had hopes and dreams. They didn't see killers who would perpetrate some of the most heinous crimes against their fellow man staring back at them. This is all taught. It's all taught in this system. It's all taught out there.
Initially convicted of armed robbery, Casper entered the prison system more than two decades ago. It wasn't long before he was asked to do the Brotherhood's bidding.
And they point blank told me, you're a proud Aryan man, aren't you, Casper? And I said, yes, I am. It would bother you if you knew that there's somebody that hurt your race was walking your yard, wouldn't it? I said, yes, it would. And they said, well, we want you to kill him.
Casper saw himself not as a killer, but a warrior.
Just because you go out and kill or you're willing to, that does not make you a warrior. A warrior serves something greater than himself.
This twisted mythology goes to the very core of how the Aryan Brotherhood sees itself. The place is California. The time, the mid-1960s. On the streets, the American Civil Rights Movement sparks sweeping social and historic changes. But in prisons like San Quentin and Folsom, the Civil Rights Movement takes a very different turn. Race-based gangs like the Mexican Mafia and the Black Guerrilla Family emerge and usher in a new era of violence. White inmates respond by creating a new gang of their own.
These were guys that had an idea about, you know, stopping victimization of white men at the hands of Africans or Mexicans or, you know, their enemies in the prison system. It started out just that simple.
Brand members mark their bodies with tattoos that identify their allegiance and signify their outlaw status. But the gang's definitive symbol is the shamrock. This three-leaf clover originated with the gang's founding members, many of whom were Irish bikers. Anyone outside the gang who dares to wear it will face severe repercussions.
Somebody wearing shamrocks and coming into the prison system, even if they were Irish, bona fide, legitimate, O'Brien, well, you know, sorry for your luck, cover it up, you know. There's only one people that wear the shamrock in the system, and that's the Aryan Brotherhood.
But inmates don't simply join the brand. Recruits must make their bones, prison slang for killing another inmate. It's all part of the core Aryan Brotherhood oath. Blood in, blood out.
It means you kill to get in, and the only way you can get out is to die.
But Michael Thompson defied this blood oath. Something caused this notorious brand leader to turn against his brothers. Today, he's the gang's ultimate target. For his protection, Thompson does his time on an undisclosed special needs yard. By simply talking to us, he's placing himself in even greater danger.
Even the making of a film has this potential. You have people that are looking at this situation right now and going, man, what's he doing? You see, is he rapping? Is he telling? Is he collaborating?
The Aryan Brotherhood will do anything to stop Michael Thompson, even send a brand assassin onto his yard. As a correctional officer at San Quentin State Prison, Lieutenant Vernell Crittenden has witnessed numerous gang-related homicides, but nothing shocked him like the crimes committed by the Aryan Brotherhood.
When I would go into the cell where the body was found, there would be blood, and I mean not just a smear of blood, but blood all over the walls, all over the toilet.
Vernell never expected the gang to come after him. But on the yard at San Quentin, he witnesses the Aryan Brotherhood murder an inmate in cold blood.
Wham! He hits him in the chest with that weapon. Wham! He hits him in again. He might have hit him three times, but he at least hit him twice.
The murder weapon is never found, so Vernell's eyewitness testimony is critical. 5 days later, the warden shows Vernell a photograph of an alleged Brotherhood associate outside prison walls.
And he says, well, we've been told that he's coming down, that he was sent down from Oregon to attack you because you were a primary witness in the murder case.
Vernell leaves the prison immediately, accompanied by an armed escort.
I think the first thing that went through my mind was my safety of my family and my loved ones, and I was very, very concerned about them because I felt they were defenseless.
For 3 weeks, Vernell and his family remain hidden inside a safe house, under 24-hour surveillance. Prison officials are unable to prove that the threat is genuine, so Vernell returns to work. When he arrives, a Brotherhood dropout approaches him.
And he says, I know they told you it ain't true probably, but it is, man. I'm telling you, they're after you. You better watch your back.
To this day, Vernell keeps his eyes open at all times.
You don't walk out your door without looking out the window first to make sure there isn't someone standing out there.
Vernell has every reason to be afraid. 1 year later, the Aryan Brotherhood would prove that even prison guards are not untouchable. October 22nd, 1983, Marion Federal Penitentiary. Thomas Silverstein, a vicious brand member known as Terrible Tom, is escorted by three officers along the prison tier. Frisked and shackled, no one imagines he's still a threat. But Silverstein slips his shackles into an adjacent cell. Using a stolen cuff key, an inmate frees Silverstein in seconds and hands him a lethal shank. Another convict distracts the three officers, splitting them apart. Armed, Silverstein rushes a defenseless guard on the tier. He stabs him nearly 40 times. Hours later, another Brotherhood member follows Silverstein's lead. Escaping his shackles, he too kills an officer. For the first time, two prison guards are murdered inside a federal penitentiary on the very same day.
What's the message? Can't stop us. Doesn't matter if you've got guns, doesn't matter if we're in the hole, doesn't matter if we're in restraints. We're going to kill you. That's the message.
These brazen killings strengthened the Brotherhood's reputation, but also sealed their fate. Today, many of the gang's top leaders are locked down 23 hours a day in the most secure supermax prisons in the nation. Is it possible that these men are still in control of this vast criminal organization? Gang defectors have revealed that all Brotherhood assassinations must be approved by the brand's leaders, especially attacks on a rival gang. Now, federal prosecutors are searching for a link between the Lewisburg murders and the brand's kingpins, Barry Mills and Tyler Bingham. On August 26, 1997, 2 days before the Lewisburg attack, prison officials at the Colorado Supermax confiscate a suspicious communication sent to Barry Mills. It reads, "My boy's wife gave birth to a strapping 8-pound, 7-ounce baby boy." Gang investigators recognize the note for what it is, a simple Brotherhood code. The baby's weight corresponds to the number 187, the California Penal Code for murder. The note is beginning to look like an authorization letter for the hit. As investigators look deeper into the text, they discover a far more sophisticated code. If they can decipher the letter, they may possess the key piece of evidence they need to destroy the Aryan Brotherhood. On the sensitive needs yard, where Michael Thompson lives, a piece of metal has gone missing. It's a serious security breach. Correctional officers know the missing metal could become a lethal weapon in the hands of any inmate.
Just because this is a sensitive needs yard doesn't mean that you're not subject to murder or assassination.
Thompson has already survived numerous attempts on his life. Today, it's not a question of if the gang will strike, but when. Michael Thompson was one of the brand's highest-ranking members. But the fate of a Brotherhood defector forced him to make a startling decision. Stephen Barnes was a trusted Brotherhood member until he agreed to testify against the brand. Prison officials placed Barnes in a protective custody unit to safeguard him from the gang's notorious reach. The leadership convened a high-level meeting, and a chilling solution was presented.
So we can't get to Steve Barnes, so now the issue comes up, let's kill his family. Let's kill his wife, let's kill his kids, his daughter. Let's kill his mother, his father. Let's make an example here.
So we met as a council and we said, can we do this? And we took a vote. I was the only one who voted and said, no, we can't do this.
But Thompson is ignored, and his brothers settle on the perfect assassin. Curtis Price, a brand member who is about to parole. Until now, the gang's violence had never reached beyond prison walls. It would be a move into uncharted territory. After Curtis Price paroles, he breaks into the home of Stephen's father, Richard Barnes, and finds him fast asleep. Wielding a .22 caliber handgun, Price fires three shots, execution style, to the back of Barnes' head. Afterwards, Price visits the home of Elizabeth Hickey, a female associate who helped him obtain the murder weapon. Price pays her back, beating her to death with a blunt object.
That was the beginning of a whole new era relative to the Aryan Brotherhood.
The murders forced Michael Thompson to confront a level of brutality that was appalling, even to a hardened killer such as himself.
When you take somebody out there, a child, parents, a woman, and you say, I'm going to kill her to make an example. Oh, wait a minute. Not me. I don't do that. That goes beyond what I'm willing to do as a human being.
In a move that shook the Aryan Brotherhood to its very foundation, Thompson turned against the gang he'd killed for, the gang he would have died for. Now, he's the ultimate defector.
There's nothing that the Aryan Brotherhood would like more than to have me whacked.
Barry Mills and Tyler Bingham may want to see their former brother dead, but the brand's larger goal is to move beyond prison walls and into the streets of our communities.
There's not a gang today that exists other than for profit. That's why they're a gang.
There's no accounting for how much money the Brotherhood takes in, but they're rumored to control a multi-million dollar operation, all from inside America's most secure prisons.
Everything that you have available to you out there in society is available to us in this environment. Whether it be drugs, or alcohol, or prostitution, extortion.
The Brotherhood provides inmates with whatever they want. The harder something is to acquire, the higher the price tag.
When I was at Old Folsom, and still a part of the Aryan Brotherhood, we were taking as much as, I know we estimated 1 year, 1978, $3.5 million, just out of Folsom alone. You want to remember that the vast majority of people in here are addicts, drug addicts.
And so every money, all monies that they can get their hands on from their families, the monies that they make at their little jobs, whatever it might be, they use to facilitate their addiction.
The price of addiction can be steep. Behind bars, heroin, meth, and marijuana are worth 3 to 4 times their value on the streets. A single cigarette can cost as much as $40. The supply is tight, but inmates continue to find ingenious ways to smuggle drugs inside the walls. But ultimately, all narcotics must come from the streets.
Open the door!
Special Agent Matt Beechner is at war with the Aryan Brotherhood. Not inside prison, but on the streets of California.
Police officer! Police!
He has vehicle theft with priors.
Beechner is a member of the California Department of Corrections Special Service Unit. He's part of an elite squad of former prison officers that keep tabs on paroled gangsters. The team combats the flow of drugs into the prison system by taking down gang associates on the streets.
So what's the straw?
It ain't nothing in there.
You know what's in there. We both know what's in there. Turn around, dude.
They can stop the drugs. They can destroy the economics that fuel gang politics inside prison. Today, the team has a lead on a dangerous parolee at large. He's a validated member of the Nazi Lowriders, a prison gang that works for the Aryan Brotherhood.
The NLR is a feeder group to the Aryan Brotherhood, the Nazi Lowriders. The only way that the Aryan Brotherhood could get some of their work done on the main lines was to get a subgroup to be like the Cub Scouts to the Boy Scouts.
Beechner suspects this ex-con is continuing to do the Brotherhood's business outside prison walls. Beechner believes it's time to take him down. The squad fans out and approaches the house in tactical formation, but their target is nowhere to be found. Inside the house, Beechner's team finds numerous drug violations and letters that indicate the parolee is still communicating with incarcerated gangsters.
Have you maybe seen him around the apartment complex?
Yeah, that's him.
Long sleeve gray.
When the team apprehends their target, they find he's high on meth, but willing to cooperate.
Dope, guns, stone bars, everything.
For the AB?
Well, AB and NLR, you know what I mean? We're working together.
Beechner's team doesn't just bust paroled gangsters. They collect intelligence on the street to help tear down the Brotherhood's influence inside the prison system.
Do you have to kill somebody to get into the AB? Would you have to do that?
They're not going to give you that rock for free.
So you're going to have to earn it like that? So in order to have that rock, you're going to have to kill someone.
You're going
to
kill.
Before you answer,
this ex-con is now heading back to prison. It's one less gang associate outside prison walls. But Beechner knows he's fighting an uphill battle. Every week, gang members attempt to move drugs from the streets into the penal system. And convicts have ways to get contraband past prison security. This surveillance video shows a prison visiting room where an illegal handoff is about to take place. The woman on the left has smuggled a balloon full of drugs into a maximum security facility.
And the way she's got her jacket wrapped around her, it's a sign of she's trying to hide something, she's nervous. And again, look, you can tell that he's looking all around.
The inmate, seated across from her, knows they are being observed by video cameras, but he's not sure where they're placed.
She's not concerned about him, he's not concerned about her, he's concerned about something else.
The inmate looks around nervously, waiting for the right moment to make the switch.
And if you watch her foot, she's going to kick him when she thinks it's the best time for him to reach in and grab the narcotics. There was the kick.
Another inmate tries to block the camera's view as the couple makes the handoff. But a second camera clearly captures the exchange.
This is a big moneymaker for him. If he gets that narcotics back to the yard, on the street it may cost him, for that size of narcotics, it may cost him maybe $500-$600. He'll more than triple the money.
The inmate now inserts the drug-filled balloon into his anal cavity, a common strategy to get contraband past prison security.
And now when he goes back through visiting, unless they do a very, very thorough check, the narcotics are secreted and hidden.
For every bust prison officials make, there are dozens of handoffs that go unnoticed. On the yard, cash never changes hands. Inmates pay with what they own, television sets or radios, or have family members pay money to gang associates on the outside. And if those debts aren't paid, there are very real consequences. Narcotics. It's the Aryan Brotherhood's real source of power. Anyone who threatens Brotherhood business, including the gang's most loyal members, can end up in the hat.
It means you're on a hit list. You're going to die one day. And if they got anything to do with it, it's going to be by their hand.
Today, Casper Crowell is on that list.
You're not a dropout. You're not a defector. You might have divorced the brand, but the brand certainly hasn't divorced you.
Casper walked away from the brand, a crime punishable by death.
The lines that you had that were so clear at one time, they start getting blurred, and you start justifying things that are unjustifiable.
While doing time in solitary confinement, Casper realized the gang was betraying the very principles he believes in.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but they're race traitors. The heroin brotherhood is what it is, really.
Casper had sworn to protect his fellow white inmates. Instead, he was killing them, all in the name of brotherhood business.
I can still hear the gurgling on your bile and blood as life is looking you in the eyes of somebody who was your friend just hours before until the hit came down. I can still see it all. I can imagine what little kids must think that I stole their daddy from them. I deserve to be here.
Casper notified prison officials that he was ready to debrief. He would tell gang investigators anything they wanted to know about his affiliation with the Aryan Brotherhood. But he refused to testify against anyone else.
I didn't do anything so dishonorable. What I've done was seek to set about doing right by my family, by my folk, by my race, and by my community. And that doesn't make me a bad man. It makes me a man who woke up one morning and said, what I'm involved with is bad.
Casper only wishes more of his former brothers could see the gang the way he does.
Not everybody who's caught up in the Aryan Brotherhood is a bad person. Not everybody sees it for what it really is. I sure as hell didn't. And it was all right around me. I just didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to see it.
Government prosecutors are far less forgiving. And now they have a key piece of evidence in hand in the Mills and Bingham case. It's a deciphered Brotherhood code, and its contents may bust the gang's secrets wide open. Michael Thompson is marked for death by the Aryan Brotherhood, one of the most lethal prison gangs in the nation. Thompson was not just a member of the gang. He was an architect behind the brand's rise to power. But when the gang began killing innocents outside the walls of prison, Thompson realized the Aryan Brotherhood was out of control.
Thompson is well qualified to answer the questions and will be candid in his responses.
Thompson didn't just defect. He went after the gang with a vengeance, willingly aiding prosecutors and testifying against his former brothers, including Curtis Price, a brand assassin.
You're sitting on a stand and there sits an individual that you've been very intimate with for years. This is a man who's a member of an organization just like you, who you profess to love, that you called brother. And now you're sitting on a stand and you're looking him in the eye and you're saying, yes, he murdered that young woman. He murdered that man.
Today, Curtis Price is on death row, in part because of Michael Thompson's testimony.
I don't have a problem at all with violence against those who understand what it's about. But I will not and cannot tolerate violence against children or women or elders.
in any capacity, in any shape, in any form.
Thompson has spent the past 20 years helping law enforcement to bring down the Brotherhood.
I felt I had a responsibility to combat that which I had created. And so I made training films, I went out and I did lectures, I went into court and I testified. I still do it to this day.
Despite the information Thompson has provided, the Aryan Brotherhood continues to spill blood inside America's prisons. Federal prosecutors Terry Flynn and Joey Blanche are now trying to tie the Aryan Brotherhood's top leaders to the brutal assassinations at Lewisburg Penitentiary.
We were charging the leaders of the organization with murders that they did not individually commit. They were, however, the people who ordered the murder to be committed.
But how did these two men order the Lewisburg hit, locked down in the nation's most secure supermax prison, 1,500 miles away from the scene of the crime? The answer lies in the coded letter sent to Barry Mills. The code is so complex, it requires FBI cryptologists and former gang members to decipher it. It's called a biliteral cipher, a system developed 400 years ago by Sir Francis Bacon.
When you look at the cover sheet of the message, or of a letter, it looks like a standard letter. But if you actually look deep into the letter and look at every single letter used in the actual text, you will see there's two different alphabets employed.
One alphabet is written in plain block letters. The other letters are cursive. The block letters translate to A's. The cursive letters become B's. When these A's and B's are placed into groupings of five, they correspond to a single letter from a secret Brotherhood key. This new sequence of letters seems to make no sense, because it's actually a second layer in the code. Gang members in possession of the cipher key can easily unscramble these letters, and a chilling message will appear. Confirm message from Chris to move on DC. The letter is asking Barry Mills for confirmation to attack members of the DC Blacks.
So they intercepted this letter and they thought, we got it. We stopped it. Now we know what the Aryan Brotherhood is planning, and we have stopped it by stopping this message from going through.
But 2 days later, the Lewisburg assassination was carried out. What prison officials didn't know was that Tyler Bingham sent a second letter to his fellow brothers at Lewisburg. Bingham used a deceptively primitive Brotherhood code. It's called a hit and miss, a letter written in invisible ink. Michael Thompson demonstrates just how it's done.
So this would be yellow legal tablet paper. And what I would do is I would take a piece of wood without the lid, and I'd fill a cup with urine.
Writing in urine or citrus juice will produce a simple, invisible text. When the liquid dries, it dries clear.
And when the person is getting it receives it, he takes a piece of paper, and he rolls it up like this. And so I would light this, okay? And then I hold this up, and I take it, and I just bring it back and forth like this across the paper.
Under the heat of a flame, the message becomes crystal clear. The letter says, war with DC Blacks, TD. Tyler Bingham was sanctioning the attack. On August 28, 1997, the hit is carried out at Lewisburg, exactly as ordered. The hit and miss letter was never recovered, though gang defectors admitted to receiving it. But Terry Flynn and Joey Blanche had the hard evidence they needed, the original biliteral cipher sent to Barry Mills.
These people, as the leaders of the Aryan Brotherhood, had the authority to order hits all over the country, and that's what they did.
On July 28, 2006, Barry Mills and Tyler Bingham were convicted of being the leaders of the Aryan Brotherhood and ordering dozens of jailhouse murders, including the Lewisburg assassination. Mills and Bingham received consecutive life sentences with no possibility of parole.
Killing people in prison is just as serious as killing people outside of the streets.
The verdict was a critical victory against one of the deadliest prison gangs in the nation. But the jury was split on the sentence, and Mills and Bingham escaped the death penalty. Casper Crowell left the gang 8 years ago. Today, he's doing his time peacefully and has pursued advanced degrees. But he worries that the trial will only strengthen the gang's reputation.
What you've done when you fail to kill them, you know, in the process of that is, you've become a recruitment tool for young disenfranchised youth that is coming to prison for the first time. They see this and they say the federal government put their best into this, and this is the result of it? I'm untouchable. I'm hooking up with these guys and I'm going to be untouchable. That's what they're saying.
For Michael Thompson, the years spent reflecting on his crimes have forced him to take a hard look at himself.
I always thought I was a pretty good guy. But when you stop and you really look at yourself, you find out you're not all that cool. You know, you got some real faults here that you need to look at. Maybe I'm in prison for a good reason.
Thompson has not engaged in violence since leaving the gang more than two decades ago. After 34 years behind bars, he believes one thing is sure. The government alone can't stop the Aryan Brotherhood.
Remorse is always subjective. You cannot impose that upon somebody. All the sentences in the world, by all the courts in the world, cannot impose remorse upon an individual. He or she must embrace that themselves.
Barry Mills and Tyler Bingham are headed back to the Colorado Supermax, to the very same prison cells from which they've long been running their criminal empire. Prison officials are now hoping to restrict their ability to communicate in the future. The trials will continue. More than a dozen Brotherhood members will soon have their day in court. But Michael Thompson fears that no matter the outcome, the Aryan Brotherhood's reign is far from over.
People will step up. That's the nature of the beast. And it always will be.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised. They began as the most notorious prison gang in Texas.
There was people stabbing at people every time you walked down the run over there.
They committed homicides in front of God and everybody.
They were born out of a powerful ideology.
It was absolutely about white power.
They are the ABT. The Aryan Brotherhood of Texas.
I'm bounty hunted. Been solicited for murder for hire.
Now, they rule the streets, too.
It's just wide open. There's a lot of them the authorities don't even know about.
And no neighborhood is safe.
I mean, I wouldn't want one living next door to me.
Growing metropolis. It's filled with million-dollar mansions, luxury cars, and designer boutiques.
So you think of Dallas as a ritzy place. The upper echelon, the wealthy living there.
Big D, one of America's 10 largest cities, is predominantly rich and white. It's also the perfect cover for a criminal enterprise. The Aryan Brotherhood of Texas.
You know, Dallas is the perfect hideout for them.
There's AB in every town in Texas. I mean, you're going to run into them everywhere. You may not even realize it. They don't all have shaved heads and tattoos.
ABT has invaded these neighborhoods and the social fabric of the city. Gang members live and work here, virtually undetected.
They can clean themselves up and look just like you do, you know, and like your average white American.
54-year-old Bobby Adams knows how to keep a low profile, in spite of being an ABT general.
Obviously, by virtue of my rank, I've been involved in just about everything. I'll just leave it at that.
Known as BA, he says the gang has always prided itself on anonymity.
That's what it originally was. You can go around bragging about who you was or what you was. You know, we knew who we were and knew what we was about, and there was no need for any bragging.
The son of a bricklayer, BA grew up poor and rebellious.
I was attracted to criminal elements and what have you, you know, and that's, you know, couldn't nobody tell me anything, you know.
The ABT was a perfect fit.
We had a reputation for taking care of our business and not accepting any kind of, no kind of flack from anyone.
In the ABT, murder isn't just accepted, it's encouraged.
They had no regard for human life, and if they were going to go after somebody and kill them, well, so be it. They were just going to have to kill them.
It's not psychotic behavior, and there's nothing wrong with it. Even if you struggle with it in your mind, how could you take somebody else's life if you're protecting something you love? And it's the same concept. It's nothing more.
Dale Jamedon, a.k.a. Tiger, believes that laws don't apply to him.
Point after doing things for so long where you're like you feel like, okay, well, like almost like an immortalized, like I don't have to follow the rules.
Tiger has lived a hard life. He was drinking by 6, smoking weed at 10, and snorting cocaine when he was 13.
An addiction turns into a hunger that you're going to feed one way or the other. And I started to commit, you know, petty crimes and things like that to achieve my purpose of getting high.
A robbery conviction eventually landed Tiger in the Polunsky Unit, a maximum security facility in South Texas. He went in a petty criminal and became a gangster killer.
I wasn't a gang member when I came to prison. Things happen.
Tiger won't say when he joined the ABT or why. He knows talking about his brothers could get him killed.
I'll do anything in the world, second. Whether it's to die, come to prison for the rest of my life, whatever's going to better the organization at that particular moment in time.
ABT has more than 1,000 members in prison, according to the Texas Department of Corrections. They estimate that number is double in the free world.
Murders, thefts, vehicle thefts, breaking in houses, any crime of opportunity which may allow them access to your driver's license, your Social Security card, your credit cards, and your checkbooks.
35-year-old Jason Hankins is known as Trooper, a gang general. He's claimed ABT for nearly 2 decades and has been arrested countless times. It's a lifestyle he was born into.
When I was growing up, I knew some old schoolers and some biker dudes. They had things going on out in the world, wrecking yards, auto shops, and I seen how they were making money, and the lifestyle appealed to me at a younger age.
By the time Trooper was a teen, he was an experienced burglar, making $200 a day by robbing houses.
I would go in during the daytime hours when people are at work, take jewelry and guns.
He was busted for burglary in 1992 and sentenced to 8 years in prison, where he found the Brotherhood.
We were down for each other, looked out for each other. There was more loyalty and there was more realness in the penitentiary.
Trooper would find out that loyalty had its limits. Summer, 2006. Trooper was introduced to 19-year-old Breonna Taylor, who wasn't a member of the gang and came from an affluent Dallas family.
Unfortunately, Brianna made some poor decisions as she got out of high school. She got into some things she shouldn't have, and she was introduced to members of the Aryan Brotherhood.
Trooper and Brianna started dating. By August, Trooper's brothers, including Tiger, turned on her. Some said she was bad-mouthing the Brotherhood. Others said she was the victim of a crime and was going to snitch.
The other story is Tiger had committed an assault against Brianna and she was going to go to the police.
Trooper had no idea what was about to take place.
I should have took her to Fort Worth, back to Fort Worth with me, but she wanted to stay in Dallas.
One August night, gang members brought Brianna to the North Dallas home of Tiger's girlfriend, Jennifer McClellan. According to police reports, Tiger called the shots as Jennifer and another ABT member began to torture Brianna in the garage.
They shaved her head. They beat her.
They hooked Brianna up to a battery charger and shocked her. Then she was sexually assaulted.
At that point, Tiger said it's gone too far, and he made the decision that she has to be killed that night.
Brianna was eventually choked to death with a zip tie. The group tried to cover it up by bathing her body in acid to destroy any DNA evidence. Then they put her remains in a plastic tub, filled it with concrete, and dumped it in a nearby lake. In just days, Tiger was identified as a suspect in a home invasion robbery. He decided to flee Dallas, leading police on a high-speed chase down Interstate 45.
So I've got like 100 cop cars behind me, and they hit the lights and I hit the gas. I put it on cruise control, like, I got a full tank. How many of them squad cars?
His girlfriend, Jennifer, was riding shotgun.
I don't know why we do, but we ride like rednecks. And I said, hey, get over here, you know, come over here in the middle. But when I was a kid, I used to think that that was so silly. Why is she riding in the middle of that truck like that? But now I understand.
Tiger planned to go out guns blazing. To do it, he had to be high. So he pulled out a bag of meth.
And I grabbed a handful and I shoved it in my mouth and I'm like, okay, this is it. You know, but I'm psyching myself out, you know, like, I'm not going to jail. They'll never take me alive.
Dallas, a city of power and privilege. A high society built on big oil. Its pretentious, predominantly white suburbs mask a more sinister side. The Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, or ABT. A gang built on racism and violence.
You simply think white supremacists. You think of a one race, a white race, the only race. You think of Adolf Hitler.
The seeds of the ABT were first planted in the early 1960s. At the time, the Texas prison system was run by George Beto, a man who believed in giving exemplary inmates special status. The inmates were known as building tenders. Mostly white, these favored prisoners were allowed total control.
They had blackjacks and knives, and they run the wings and run the hallways, and they pretty much did whatever the warden told them to do.
In 1972, inmate David Ruiz filed a lawsuit alleging barbaric treatment by the building tenders. The trial was endless. And in 1980, a federal judge ruled to end the tender system. Almost immediately, the prisons plunged into total chaos.
there was kind of a violence vacuum. We hired more guards who were inexperienced, who did not know how to deal with the convict subculture. People started joining gangs and forming gangs to fill that void.
The Texas Department of Corrections, or TDC, was clearly divided among racial lines. And the once favored white inmates found themselves in the minority.
Everybody was sitting back there taking pieces of TDC as they could, and the whites wanted their piece too.
In 1981, a small group of white inmates reached out to the Aryan Brotherhood in California. The notorious white supremacist gang that had started in San Quentin almost two decades earlier. Although the AB made up less than 1% of the prison population, they were responsible for 18% of the murders within the system. Texas inmates like Bobby Adams, known as BA, wanted to capitalize on the Aryan Brotherhood's bloody reputation. They asked for permission to form their own sector.
There was a lot of mutual respect. It seemed like a good idea at the time. We would all be there for each other anyway.
The AB granted permission, with one distinction. The new group would be the ABT, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas. BA, a habitual burglar sentenced to life, began drafting the gang's constitution, the unbreakable rules the members were to live by.
It was all about looking out for ourselves, spiritually, financially, physically, you know, taking care of our own.
In the gang's eyes, the Brotherhood was the only thing that was right in a system gone wrong.
We considered ourselves to be professional criminals. We didn't take or accept rapists or child molesters or snitches or nothing like that.
The ABT's primary purpose was to protect themselves from other races. In their eyes, the gang was on the front line in reinstating the white man to his rightful position of power. The ABT set about ruling the prisons with a vengeance.
We had some white boys for you. There were some I was even afraid of. They weren't afraid to use a shank, and they weren't afraid to use their fists.
We turned into building tenders. All right. Without the backing of the administration.
The ABT developed a deep hatred for two black Texas prison gangs. The Mandingo Warriors and the Self-Defense Family.
They went full force at it, killing each other. The whites killed blacks and the blacks killed whites.
Life was cheap in here then.
The ABT reigned through sheer terror. Between 1983 and 1984, 52 inmates were killed in prison gang violence within the Texas Department of Corrections. The ABT was responsible for one-third of those murders.
It was their MO. I mean, just stab them anywhere in the neck and the head and the back and the stomach and just gut them. And that's simply to send a message to other people, don't mess with us.
By 1985, the ABT had become the masters of the Texas Department of Corrections, calling themselves the Mad Dog.
We didn't recognize no other laws, no rules other than the ones we made.
They did recognize other hardened criminals who could benefit their cause, like Virgil Barfield, a.k.a. Midget. At the time he was being recruited, he had already murdered one man on the inside and been acquitted.
They already knew my reputation. They more sought me out than I was went seeking to join.
The ABT wanted Midget on their side, but to become a part of ABT, you had to spill blood. They knew Midget wouldn't hesitate.
I was pretty well, you just tell me what to do, I'll go take care of it, and that's good enough for me.
In 1985,
midget, and another inmate, Calvin Massey, were both prospects for the ABT. Then the gang found out Massey had violated their rules.
He put the tattoo on before he actually became a member, and he had been involved with a black offender. And those were two no-nos.
Midget was ordered to kill Massey. He carried a shank that had been smuggled in through the laundry into a holding area. There, he stalked Massey carefully, waiting for the perfect opportunity to strike.
Whenever he went down there to the corner, out of the way of the TV, well, out of the way of the camera, I went after him.
And all of a sudden you hear, boss man, look, he's stabbing him, he's stabbing him.
The prison guards could do nothing but watch. A guard with a camera caught the whole thing on film.
The officers did not go in there until that weapon was thrown because of the fact in a gang hit. If anything interrupts, you know, you get in the way of a gang hit, you can be hit.
In just 30 seconds, Midget stabbed Massey 41 times and slit his throat.
It's not necessarily a good feeling, but after it's done, actually, it's a relief.
Barfield became an ABT member. He did his blood in. He got a life sentence for that homicide.
The Texas Department of Corrections had seen enough. That year, they locked down 17,000 inmates. The ABT was deemed a security threat, and known members were placed in segregation. Once removed from the general population, it became difficult for the gang to recruit new prospects, but not impossible. In 1991, at age 17, Jason Hankins, trooper, was busted for burglary and dope and sentenced to 8 years at Parker County Prison.
In the prison system, it was more of a family. We stayed together.
He joined the gang his first year and moved up through the ranks. By 2000, Cooper had assumed the coveted top spot of general.
They looked to me as a leader, and I led by example.
But as he was rising, the ABT began to fracture. Older gang members perceived the newer ones to be too reckless and out of control.
They tend to be younger, they tend to be more violent.
A power struggle ensued, and the ABT split into two groups. Internally, they became known as the Ponchos and the Troopers, led by Hankins.
They didn't realize how much power and control that I had over the different units in TDC that were backing me.
The split changed the face of the gang. Many longtime members walked away, and a new generation with their own values took the reins.
Your morals are different from mine, but see, mine are still morals, it's just not the same morals.
Younger members like Dale Jameson, aka Tiger, were no longer interested in being just a prison gang. They started thinking bigger.
They were banded together in prison. They were all from the same neighborhood or thereabouts. And whenever they got out, they went back to doing what they were doing.
One way or the other, if you're a bro inside, when you come home, you're still a brother. You know?
Dallas. A city built on suburban sprawl, where money can buy a false sense of security or hide a world of evil.
You got a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, and 2 kids, and a dog, and 5-picket fence. On the weekends or after work or whatever, you're breaking 9 kinds of laws.
In 2003, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, a violent white supremacist prison gang, split.
A younger, even more vicious generation took the helm with one goal, making money.
Money's green. Money ain't black. Money ain't white. It's green.
Dallas provides the perfect shroud for trafficking methamphetamine, the ABT's biggest moneymaker.
They're making their money hand over fist. I mean, it's just coming in like nothing. So easy for them.
We weren't just pushing pennies out there. We were moving weight.
The ABT operates hundreds of meth labs around Dallas, hiding them in middle-class communities.
I've seen them in barns, I've seen them in houses, I've seen them in ice chests. It's something that these guys can set up in just almost anywhere.
These neighborhoods serve another purpose, allowing gang members to conceal their identities as hardcore felons.
One of the ideals that you're supposed to have whenever you come out of prison as an ABT member is that you need to get a job and get a place to live. If your family's not living with you, you need to get them back with you so that you can blend in better.
The blending in strategy allows the ABT to fly under the radar of not just their neighbors, but the authorities.
It's invisibility by being visible and not hiding. You have no reason to hide because you look the part.
These suburban gangsters are still strongly connected to their brothers inside the Texas Department of Corrections. And drug profits help finance their brothers on the inside.
There's a set amount of money that every bro that's out here has to pay for stamps, to correspond back and forth with people that are in prison. If you have a job, then it's like $30 a month. But if you're selling dope, it's like $150 a month.
The ABT is governed by a military-type structure. The top tier is made up of a five-man committee of generals known as the Wheel. Equal in rank, they order hits and enforce the bylaws of the Constitution, including the powerful ideology of white supremacy. Prospects must read Adolf Hitler's tyrannical Mein Kampf, which details his Aryan beliefs.
It's a good book for intelligent young white men to look at that can be easily led into this ideal that this is the way life is supposed to be.
They must also adhere to a philosophy known as 1488. 14 refers to the 14-word ideology of white nationalist David Lane, who founded a criminal enterprise dedicated to the total dominance of the Aryan race. His stated goal, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. 88 refers to the number of bylaws in the gang's constitution. The same number of precepts in Hitler's book. 8 is also said to represent the 8th letter of the alphabet, or H, which when appearing twice, HH, signifies Heil Hitler. Though they embrace racism, ABT members say they are not bigots, claiming to tolerate other races.
I'm absolutely a racist. I love my race. Am I a bigotress? No. No. A racist is a person that cares about their ethnic creed or background. And everybody, to a degree, should love where they're from or be proud of their descendants.
It's a claim that rings hollow. An ABT member gunned down a Dallas gas station attendant following the attacks of 9/11 simply because the victim looked Arab. There is one clear way to identify an ABT member: their ink. The most common tattoo features a shield adorned with a sword or swastika and is called the patch.
That patch was supposed to have been in your face.
to the inmates. Right? You see it, right? You back off from it. You know what it is. You get away.
Patches must be earned. One way to get patched in is to commit a murder. Members also mark themselves with swastikas and double lightning bolts, symbols of Hitler's Nazi Germany.
If I'm a black inmate walking down the hallway of a penitentiary and I see an inmate with a swastika on his arm, it kind of sends the message that I'm going to leave him alone.
Also common is the tattoo Peckerwood.
You'd see a lot of them say 100% Peckerwood. And that's what they were, they would associate. They were a big, strong tree that could stand and sway with adversity.
There is only one exception to the ABT's rule of white power. That's the color green.
It's a hustle, right? It's not a, I hate you because you're black, or I hate you because you're Mexican. It's, money's green. It doesn't have a concept of ethnic background or religion or creed even.
They won't hesitate to do anything for money. Even when it comes to drug trafficking across the Mexican border.
They can blend in pretty well. Clean up their talk, clean up their act, and they look like any other businessman. Border Patrol, police, whoever, they're not looking for clean-cut looking white men.
We would come back and act drunk coming across the border. And they don't want to mess with some young white kids that just went over there to have a party and they're coming back. We would act wasted. In reality, we're carrying 5,000 or 6,000 Xanax on us.
The ABT is known to make bank using dope traps.
Any place where you got users coming to buy their drugs, they're trapped there. They can't get away from it. They're so hung up on the dope.
They often set up shop in black neighborhoods where they say the community leaves them alone.
Move into a crime-infested place and you start selling your drugs or selling your guns and doing your business there, it might piss people off. But the last thing that they want in their neighborhood is to be finding black-on-white violence because it draws heat to their neighborhood.
Those who wish to deal in ABT territory are forced to pay taxes.
Say if a dope dealer wanted to deal in mesquite, we would go jam them up, tell them, hey, y'all got to pay so much, you know, for us to allow y'all to deal here.
ABT enforcers penalize those who don't play by their rules. Punishments are known to be severe and extreme. Such as the one given to this man.
They got a pair of ice grips, pulled his tongue out until his tongue split. Then they burned his ear off, his testicles. They didn't kill him, but the reason they did that because they thought he tried to set him up on a robbery deal.
The ABT's internal discipline is even harsher. Members who betray the Brotherhood have their tattoos physically removed.
Whenever you're peeling somebody's patch off, you make sure that they're conscious for it. You hold them down, and if it's so painful that they pass out, you wait till they wake up and you finish it.
They reserve the most severe punishment for those who double-cross them. These men risk being X'd out of the gang.
Quick time is a fast life. You live by a sword, or you can die by it, or be wounded by it.
August 2006. 15 miles east of Dallas, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas had vowed to silence the girlfriend of one of its highest ranking members.
She just got into the wrong crowd. I mean, you know, she was a kid, 19 years old.
Breonna Taylor was dating Jason Hinkins, a.k.a. Trooper, an ABT general. Breonna was said to be bad-mouthing the Brotherhood, and it accused Dale Jainton, known as Tiger, of sexual assault.
one night when Trooper was out of town, gang members brought Brianna to the home of Jennifer McClellan. There, Brianna was beaten, tortured, sexually assaulted, and eventually murdered.
I will tell you, it's hard for me to imagine what could have possibly been said to put that little 19-year-old girl through that. But in their eyes, whatever it was worth her life.
Tiger put Brianna's remains in a plastic tub, filled it with concrete, and dumped it in Lake Ray Hubbard.
The way that they disposed of her, they knew what they were doing.
Days later, Tiger, Jennifer, and another member of the ABT went to see two men who Tiger says owed him money.
I'm knocking on the door, I'm like, hey, you don't know me, but I know you and I want my money, and I want it now, you know. And, oh, hold on, I'm like, no, you know, hold on, dude. The only thing we're gonna hold on to is this pistol, and I'll shoot your ass if you don't got my money.
Tiger and his accomplices kidnapped the men and headed to Jennifer's house, driving straight into the arms of the FBI.
Get on the street and it's illuminated. It's 3 in the morning. I'm like, wow, what's going on? You know, what's going on there? There's feds in my house, you know? I'm like, shit.
ABT had tipped police to Brianna's murder. In a panic, Tiger released the men.
We pull out and I tell these guys, it's your lucky day. You don't have to pay. But they're crying and they think it's over. And I'm like, look, man, just walk until you hit a tree.
Tiger and Jennifer took off in his pickup truck. They pulled onto Interstate 45 with the cops in pursuit.
I'm telling her, man, look out the truck. Do you see any helicopters? I know there's got to be some helicopters. I know they're up there. They're probably just way up there where we can't hear them.
Tiger decided to go out in a big way. He told Jennifer to turn up the radio. Then he ate a handful of methamphetamine.
He was going to slam on his brakes. He was going to get out and he was going to start shooting. He was going to take as many police officers as he could and have the police take him.
Seconds later, a police chopper blinded Tiger with a spotlight. He veered toward immediate, hit the brakes, and crashed into a concrete barrier.
I had a pistol in my hand, and then I already had a cock bang, and I felt like, you know what, I can take one with me, and then I'll make them kill me, and it'll be over.
He told Jennifer they wouldn't take him alive.
And I told her to get out, and she's like, well, can I give you just one more hug? You know, I'm like, yeah, sure, you know. So she comes over there. Well, she didn't hug me. She grabbed my pistol and threw it out the window.
Police immediately surrounded Tiger's truck and took the two into custody. Both were charged with capital murder. Tiger pled guilty and was sentenced to life. In exchange, prosecutors dropped the capital murder charge against Jennifer. She is serving 20 years for aggravated assault and aggravated robbery.
I had to do whatever I had to do to get her out of it.
Tiger still insists he is not the one responsible for Brianna Taylor's death. He claims other ABT members killed her.
I didn't kill Brianna. I'm not saying that I was not involved. And I did help dispose of her remains.
Brianna's body has never been found. In Trooper's mind, Tiger is 100% responsible for the death of his girlfriend.
If I'd have known then what happened, you know, it looks like I told the detective, y'all wouldn't have been arrested him because he wouldn't have been alive.
But Trooper is far from innocent. August 26, 2006. Just one day after Tiger's arrest, Trooper was arrested in New Mexico. Authorities say he and Tiger had killed a man that Tiger said was infringing on their drug trade. They were both charged with capital murder. Tiger pled guilty,
and received a second life sentence.
Whether you want to call it reap what you sow or karma or whatever you call it, it's all the same. You know, eventually you'll fall and it'll come to an end. And I've always understood that.
Trooper denied the charges, claiming that once again, his own brothers were being disloyal.
Most of my co-defendants have gave statements trying to put the blame on me since I was ranked.
The Joint Task Force, made up of Dallas PD and the FBI, seized the moment, bringing down the Dallas chapter of ABT in a month. By September 2006, seven members and associates had traded the glitzy Dallas suburbs for a prison cell. Two of those arrested were generals.
When they arrested all of us in Dallas, that took out the ranking structure. So you got a lot of soldiers that are just out there running around trying to make steps for rank.
Their absence left a power vacuum on the streets and opened the door to even more chaos. After years of solidarity behind bars, the ABT was unraveling.
There ain't nobody really calling the shots for AB. They pretty much just do whatever they want, wherever they're at.
The Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, a prison gang built on loyalty, is falling apart. A joint task force made up of the Dallas PD and the FBI have capitalized on the gang's inner turmoil, locking away high-ranking members and associates. The power vacuum has meant the new recruits are even more vicious than their brothers behind bars.
There was not a whole lot of remorse for the things that they've done. I think that's what scares you. The fact that they would do these things like you and I would do our everyday chores at work or do our everyday chores at home. To them, that's just what they did.
Members like VA say the younger generation is too high profile, too street, and lacking serious discipline.
You know, we really should be invisible, but I don't see that because every time you turn around, you got Trooper and all that kind of stuff going on in the news. And more than half of them's telling on each other.
BA also complains that the new recruits are too strung out.
Everything coming in here now, this kid talking about all I like to do at 19 years old, 20 years old, is sit at home and eat cereal and smoke crack and watch cartoons on TV. And so, yeah, you sound like AB material to me.
Though he spent the last 25 years in the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, BA has decided it's time to give it up.
I tried to live up to that, you know. It's just reached a point where I can't do it no more.
BA knows that as long as he claims the gang, he has no shot at parole.
I mean, if it would have stayed as it was and as it originally was, I would have had no problem just staying. If I had to die in here, you know. But I don't see no sense in it anymore.
Surprisingly, Trooper, one of the highest-ranking members of the ABT, agrees.
Every time I've been arrested for the last three times, because of my so-called bros set me up. Same way with this time.
Trooper is currently awaiting trial for capital murder. He believes the Brotherhood betrayed him, and he has quit the gang.
The wheel would never let me step down because it's a majority vote. Finally, I just said, you know, screw it. I'm tired of the violence.
He is a marked man.
I would be considered an ex with extreme prejudice. I was jamming them up out in the world, and they didn't kill me out there, so it don't really bother me.
Tiger may also be marked for death. Gang members say he broke the rules by implicating others in the murder of Breonna Taylor to save himself.
Tiger sees it differently.
They're mad because I didn't stop it. You know what I mean? But that's all they can be is mad. Can't ex me for that.
Tiger is locked up in the Clements Prison Unit, doing life with no chance of parole. He remains loyal to the ABT and believes the gang will once again come to respect him.
I'll ride into the fire for one of mine and even die in an honorable stance.
The ABT is now struggling to regroup. According to authorities, there's been talk that the California Aryan Brotherhood could be called in to unify their Texas brothers. The ABT wants none of it.
California AB better stay in California. Period. Hey, nobody runs us. We're ABT. We're in California.
That would be like the Gotti group going to Venice and saying, okay, we're coming in here to take over your business because you're not doing it right. And those guys would be wearing Sicilian neckties.
Gang members are confident the ABT will remain a force to be reckoned with, no matter what it takes.
Law enforcement thinks they can weed them out. It's like the Klan, though. There's always going to be those guys that are still holding it strong. They're here to stay, and they're not going anywhere.
You have a family that you care about, maybe, you know, someone that you love. Okay, well, I feel the same way about my family, my brothers. I'll do anything in the world to protect them.